from Storyflow. This is your daily audio brief for June 25th. It's Mason, June 25th. Five things on the tape worth your attention this morning. Let's get into it. First, from DR Storm, why Claude changed the I-risk equation #168b. We are honored to count you among the 600,000 readers of Digital Storm Weekly. Please help grow our community by inviting your friends. This week, the cost and control of frontier capability stopped being a technical question and became a governance one on three fronts at once. Here is the full picture, the decision logic, and the plan, the one-sentence thesis. Next, second, from Newgrad, not so micro losses, #696jun24. Check out the negative divergence on semiconductors. Price higher highs. MACD lower lows. Same thing with how is SpaceX doing? Asterisk fraudsters abound on Substack Finance. Do not fall for scammers asking to participate in private investments, etc. Report imposters via these instructions. Daily stock markets covered in under 15 min. No ads. Up next, third, from AxieOS. Inside the Trump Senate meltdown, four Republican senators voted for the War Powers Resolution on Iran, and Trump called them out at a lunch with GOP colleagues. He pressed the group to back his Save America Act and scrap the filibuster, a request he's made before. The conversation quickly turned to Sen. Bill Cassidy, who reminded Trump that the Iran campaign had already stretched from an expected 4 weeks to 4 months. Cassidy's frustration was palpable, and the tone grew heated as Trump urged the senators to move on his agenda. Ted Cruz described the gathering as spirited, but the room remained divided. No new consensus emerged on the housing bill or the filibuster, so the status quo held firm. And then, fourth, from AxieOS, Trump runs into Republicans who won't bend. I made it clear that I wasn't going to be bullied. Why it matters, Trump's push for a pre-midterm elections crackdown via the SAVE Act has opened up the deepest GOP ruptures of his second term. To his fury, Trump is finding that senators he's written off, alienated, or even helped defeat in primaries are choosing Senate traditions over his political demands. In the middle is Senate Majority Leader John Thune, RSD, who's been blunt with the reality that Trump doesn't have the votes to get what he wants. I'm certainly not giving my consent to that, Sen. President Trump is making life hell for Senate Republicans, and they're returning the favor. I make no apologies for standing up to the president, Sen. Bill Cassidy Arla told reporters after he got into a shouting match with Trump on Wednesday at a Senate GOP lunch. Zoom in, Trump's lunch with Senate Republicans only seemed to move White House-Senate relations from bad to worse. It became a shouting match with Cassidy over the administration's lack of information sharing with the Senate on Iran. Trump rubbed Cassidy's primary defeat last month in his face during the closed-door meeting, sources told AxieOS. Just before the lunch, Trump cancelled an event to sign and tout a bipartisan housing package, a bill the White House praised Tuesday as one of the most significant pieces of housing affordability legislation in American history. Trump said he would not sign the bill until the SAVE Act, requiring voter ID and proof of citizenship to vote, is passed. Last week, Trump delayed the Senate confirmation process for Jay Clayton, ensuring Bill Pult would serve as acting director of national intelligence, at least temporarily. The president has continued his long campaign against the filibuster, which requires 60 votes to pass most legislation in the Senate, and the blue slips process, which allows senators to block judicial nominations in their state. Lisa Murkowski, R-Alaska, told reporters Wednesday about ending the filibuster. The other side, the block of GOP senators willing to defy Trump, has grown. Cassidy and Sen. John Cornyn, R. Texas, have been far more willing to speak their mind since losing recent primaries to Trump-backed candidates. They join since. Mitch McConnell, R-Ki, and Tom Tillis, RNC, who are leaving the Senate and have less reason to fear Trump's political blowback. That's on top of the usual suspects like Sense, Susan Collins, Armaine, and Murkowski, who have long been willing to vote against their party. The bottom line, it's a midterm year. Republicans want to talk about affordability and hammer Democratic socialists. Instead, they're sitting through presidential rants about the filibuster and legislation with no clear path through the Senate. Next, fifth, from AxieOS, Trump asks asks Congress for $87.6 billion, mostly for Iran war. The Trump administration asked Congress on Wednesday for $87.6 billion in supplemental funding, most of it to cover costs related to the Iran war. By the numbers, $6 to $7 billion of the request would go to the Defense Department, including $21 billion for munitions, $17.3 billion for operational costs, and $12.1 billion for classified programs, according to the letter. 11.1 billion would go to farmers, and $1.4 billion would fund the response to the Ebola outbreak in Central Africa. What they are saying, most of this request will address urgent needs related to the Iran war, Office of Management and Budget Director Russ Vought said in the letter, addressed to House Speaker Mike Johnson. I urge the Congress to take action on these important and urgent requests as soon as possible, he added. Patty Murray Dewash, the top Democrat on the Senate Appropriations Committee, said in a statement that she would closely review the request and ensure we take care of our service members, but added, I will not rubber stamp tens of billions more for this disastrous war of choice. State of play. The funding request came a day after the Senate passed a largely symbolic war powers resolution seeking to limit further military action against Iran without congressional approval. Four Republican senators joined Democrats in supporting the measure. Why it matters. The request is likely to intensify debate over presidential war powers as lawmakers in both parties question whether Congress should have authorized military action against Iran. The administration is also open to discussing additional relief for other urgent matters. Sen. What's next? House and Senate appropriators will decide whether to advance the emergency request as submitted or reshape it during negotiations. Up next. 6. From Axios. House Democrats brace for a Mandana-fueled Freedom Caucus of the Left in 2027. About 20-plus Democratic Socialists could sit in the House after the primaries, roughly doubling the current squad of 10. That surge comes from fresh wins in New York, Pennsylvania, and a handful of other states, adding names like Claire Valdez, Daria Liza Avila Chevalier, and Chris Rabb to the progressive roster. Party leaders are already bracing for a louder left-leaning bloc, fearing the same friction the GOP felt with its Freedom Caucus when margins are thin. House Democratic Caucus Chair Pete Adwiller says the strategy will be to keep talking, building relationships, and nudging the newcomers toward the broader agenda. If the new members stick together, they could wield enough leverage to shape committee assignments and policy priorities, especially in a closely divided chamber. The establishment's confidence hinges on whether Jeffries and his allies can pull the group into a cooperative rhythm without turning the floor into a perpetual tug of war. And then, 7th, from Axios. America's child population is shrinking everywhere but the South. Data, U.S. Census Bureau Vintage 2025 Population Estimates Chart, Russell Contreras/Axios. America's child population fell by 1.8 million from 2020 to 2025, with the under 18 population shrinking in every region but the South. The big picture, the South had 303,969 more children in 2025 than in 2020, according to new Census Bureau Vintage 2025 estimates reviewed by Axios. The West had the largest under 18 decline, down 1,015,068, or 5.7%. Overall, the South's total population grew 6% from 2020 to 2025, nearly double the nation's 3.1% growth. State of play, the South's overall growth reflects strong migration patterns that are adding children, people in prime family-building years, and retirees, making it the only region gaining population across all five age groups tracked by the Census Bureau. The numbers deepen a larger post-pandemic trend. America's growth is moving outward, especially across the South. Why it matters, most of America is preparing for fewer students and young families, while the South faces the opposite problem, crowded classrooms, new housing pressure, and rising political stakes. Zoom in, Southern metro counties more than accounted for the region's child population growth, offsetting losses in micro counties and rural areas, an Axios review found. Metro counties in the South added 361,757 residents under 18, a 1.5% increase. Meanwhile, southern micro counties had 18,280 fewer children in 2025, down 0.7% from 2020. Between the lines, this is not simply a story of children moving south. Counter-level population change reflects births, deaths, and migration. The data does not, by itself, show how much of the under 18 growth came from families moving in versus children being born or retained in the region. Southern counties outside metro and micro areas also had 39,508 fewer children, down 2.2%. The bottom line, nationally, the population is getting older. The US median age rose to 39.4 in July 2025, up from 38.6 in April 2020. The 65 and older population grew 16.2% nationally from 2020 to 2025. Meanwhile, the under 1.8 population fell 2.4%. What we're watching, the South's child growth could give Black and Latino families more political and economic clout, but only if booming counties invest equitably in schools, housing, transit, and health care. Next, 8th, from AxiOS. Two powerful earthquakes strike Venezuela. Geological Survey issued a red alert for shaking-related fatalities and economic losses, warning that high casualties and extensive damage were probable after a magnitude 7.2 quake and seconds later a 7.5 tremor struck just over 100 miles west of Caracas. The quake epicenter of the first quake was recorded near Morón, a town along Venezuela's Caribbean coast, with a depth of 13.6 miles. State of play officials reported extensive damage across Caracas and in several Venezuelan states. Venezuela's acting president Delcy Rodríguez said on social media officials had declared a state of emergency and she urged all citizens to remain alert, safe, and as calm as possible. What they're saying, U.S. officials have mobilized a disaster assistance team and task force to deliver and coordinate critical assistance to the Venezuelan people, said Jeremy Lewin, Undersecretary for Foreign Assistance at the State Department, on X. Working with our partners in the interim Venezuelan government, the U.S. will be sending search and rescue teams, medical and humanitarian supplies and other resources in the crucial first days after this tragic natural disaster. Editor's note, this story has been updated with additional details throughout. Two powerful earthquakes struck Venezuela on Wednesday, damaging buildings in the capital, Caracas, and in communities across the country. The big picture, the U.S. The depth of the second quake that also struck near the town was 6.2 miles. Up next, 9th, from QTR's Fringe Finance. Gold is plunging for all the wrong reasons. The dollar is ripping, gold and silver are getting smoked, and the market is once again convincing itself that the Fed is somehow going to thread the needle. The US dollar index just pushed to its highest level since May 2025, with the DXY climbing above 101 as traders rush to price in a more hawkish Fed and the possibility of renewed rate hikes. At the same time, gold has been hit for roughly 2% and silver closer to 5% in the latest move, extending a correction that has now taken both metals sharply off their highs. And then, 10th, from Adam Mancini's S&P 500 SPX/ES Futures Trade Companion. Have bulls fumbled the ball in SPX? June 25th plan. As readers know, the theme for the past several months has been buy dips. The dips vary in size, speed, duration, structure, but they all resolve the same. They get bought, and the recent major dip Wednesday after FOMC did as well, where ES sold 135 plus points. How have they been buying these though? As I frequently discuss, all major rallies in ES start on failed breakdowns, because failed breakdowns are how institutions accumulate. Institutions accumulate when ES flushes hard and goes elevator down, losing and then recovering a big previously set low. In doing so, institutions are able to trap shorts that are chasing, use them as liquidity, then price rips the other way when the low recovers. Usually, this process correlated with an external headline shock, as institutions love to use headlines for liquidity to trap shorts, or in rare cases, they slash insiders are aware of headlines in advance. On Monday evening, we saw one of those elevator down sells. I wrote on Monday at 4 p.m., bear case tomorrow begins below 7,509. ES spent the last week in a tight consolidation, mostly between 7,530 and 7,590, and we broke this shelf down Monday evening and sold, with 7,509 being a trigger down. We then sold hard down to 7,416 Tuesday morning. What comes after a big sell? Bulls bought the dip as usual via a failed breakdown. I wrote Monday at 4 p.m. Watch for for the failed breakdown of 7,427 below there. 7,427 was the major June 12th low. We swept it down to 7,416 as stated, recovered, and ripped to 7,472. The task for bulls today was to recover the 7,530 shelf in order to regain control, with bears controlling below. I wrote yesterday at 4 p.m. my general lean is Edescan Baptist 7,530. Bulls must recover it after an initial dip to bottom out. We began pushing up towards 7,530 this morning, but ES only made it to 7,490 before failing to 7,409 a little afternoon. This produced another dip buy. I wrote yesterday at 4 p.m. below there. The obvious setup is the failed breakdown of today's daily low, which is located at 7,415. We recovered and popped to 7,440 before rejecting into the close today. Have bulls fumbled the ball? In today's newsletter, I'll expand on this. I'll go over today's failed breakdowns. These are key to know. And I'll discuss the actionable plan for tomorrow. That's the read. Watch the tape. Ignore the noise. Back tomorrow.